WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Every Friday at about this time, Fresh Air's film reviewer Bill Van Wert joins us to review new movies and to highlight movies on television. This week we get another extra special addition to Bill's feature. He's also going to give us his impression of the Academy Awards. But we'll start with the film The Foxes, which I think just opened, starring Jodie Foster. What did you think of it?
Started today. I'm being slightly facetious now. It's a little bit of an update on Little Darlings. It takes the other side of the spectrum. We're instead of two young girls, we have four young women. And instead of their worrying about teenager status to come, as they did in Little Darlings, here the four women have done it all. One hasn't. And it's ironic that she, the only virgin in the film, gets married at the end. She conforms the way that all the parents in the film want the other women to do. It's a very strange film for me, and I think that some of it has to do with my owning up to a bias, which I'll get to in a minute. And I think maybe I can let people understand how we come to films with a bias based on our age or our own experience, if a film gives us a particular slice of life on the spectrum. I thought it very strange in the final credits that the producers wished to thank someone named Peter Hollywood, and I think this is a makeup name. I can't imagine anyone having a name like that. I watched the credits, and I noticed a lot of credits going to Janice Ian, three songs, Donna Summer, a couple songs, Bob Seger, Cher, Munich Machine, some other groups I didn't even had never heard of before. And I think that it functions, the music, as a point of departure for me, because it plays as a barometer of the angst of these four high school teenagers. They're all 15, going on 16. They've all had problems with their families. The film is careful to point out that the society, if you're looking for a wrong, goes back to the parents. No parents are healthy in the film. All kinds of broken homes. Within the parameters, then, of the parents are screwy and we're in L.A., which is a mess to begin with. Lots of shots of the porn district and North Hollywood and weird people and weird dogs dressed up and so forth. Within that context, then, we're asked to look at four young women who try to varying degrees to get out of their boxes, to get out of the constraints of their lives. They're constantly talking about going to New York or setting up a boutique or getting away. At the end of the film, they're talking perhaps more realistically, maybe not, of getting married or of going to college. These things seem to become the escape. I'm not going to give away the plot of the film, but a lot of it has to do with polarities, decisions whether to take drugs or not. Everybody seems to be doing every kind of drug in the film, Quaaludes and hallucinogens of all kinds. At one point, it's a decision whether to stop taking drugs or not. There's a flap in the film between the hoods in the school and the nice boys. And except for the four women who are foxes, and the marquee says they dared to do it all, I don't understand what that means. I think it's a false come-on, because on the one hand, they've done it all and are looking for something else. On the other hand, they are just too scared to get out of their situation, so they haven't done it all. The men in the film are very stereotyped, and, you know, it's you know, if that's a true or authentic cross-section of what high school is like, then it's a sad state. But I think that a lot of the emphasis falls upon Jodie Foster in the lead role.
She was terrific, I thought, in Taxi Driver. How is she in this movie?
She's excellent in this film also, and that's how I would tie her in with the music. Donna Summer's On the Radio plays, and it's becomes a kind of leitmotif for the rest of the music of the film. Periodically, you hear songs on the radio that are supposed to comment on their situation. After you hear Donna Summers actually sing on the radio, roughly at the two-thirds point of the film, then slow guitars play the theme on the radio throughout the rest of the film.
Oh, God.
So it gets serious, okay? Jodie Foster is asked to be our adult, young woman turned adult, and the other women accuse her of that. We don't need another mother. But she's asked to mother the other three, and she's asked to be the voice of college. At one point, she loses her cool and gets very angry at one of the other women and gives her a speech about, well, this is life and life is tough and you're going to do it this way and grow up. And she carries it off, but the film doesn't. She's excellent, and I think for a film like this, she needs to be a lot less excellent. What was real for me in the film were not the scenes of high school or racing with the cars or skateboards or, you know, all of the American Graffiti kind of things that can go on. What was real for me were the scenes involving Jodie Foster and Sally Kellerman, who plays her mother, and the one scene involving Jodie Foster and her father. I don't know the name of the actor who plays the role. They're separated, the parents. She sees her father once in the film. He's involved with rock concerts, and he's coming through town with a rock concert. He takes her in the men's room, and he creates a fantasy for her of building a ranch for her someday with horses and friends around and stability in the family. And it's a very touching scene, and the scenes with the mother as well. Sally Kellerman plays the role of a very neurotic 40-year-old mother who's studying exams on Plato and trying to start affairs anywhere she can and very worried about her changing body and extremely hypersensitive about Jodie Foster and her friends, the high school friends. But they have some beautiful scenes together where they curl up in bed and Jodie Foster reads Plato for her mother when her mother's freaked out. And those are the scenes that stick for me, and they don't seem to have any place in with the rest of the film, which is highly superficial, I think. Another way to look at it, and here's my bias, is I don't know. If you are a teenager looking at this film, perhaps just those scenes between Jodie Foster and her mother or Jodie Foster and her father become the superficial scenes, become the things that aren't true in your experience. But for me, those are the only breakthrough moments in the film where something is said beyond the predictable, what you'd expect to be going on in high school. And I'm not sure what the targeted audience is then. Probably it's a mixed bag, as I've presented it. Probably those scenes at the rock concert, which don't push the narrative any further at all, are there for a teenage audience. And in a sense, people in the audience are teenagers, are asked to watch their peer group suffer. Because there are no joys for teenagers in this film. Everyone is really looped out, losing boyfriends right and left. Nothing works.
How does Jodie Foster look in the film? Does she look different than a taxi driver?
Well, she does. She looks like an older teenager, not hip at all. And the other three are, in varying degrees, very appropriate to the film. I mean, they look like there was some research done in the casting. And they are silly appropriately. Whereas Jodie Foster, I think, looks too wise for the part. She really, when she talks, there's an authority behind her voice that makes me feel that this is the wrong vehicle for her. Clearly, someone with that kind of face, and dressed as chic, as properly as she is, and with that kind of authority to her presence, really would get out of teenage angst, you know, and do what she says she's going to do all along in the film. The psychic trade-offs are that she's asked to mother, where all the other mothers fall through. So she really is mothering the whole high school. And it's a strange film that way.
Okay, well, the film is The Foxes, and it opened today, and it stars Jodie Foster. Well, probably a lot of people were watching and listening Monday night when the annual Academy Awards were handed out. What were your impressions, Bill?
Well, I can't say I was surprised, and I don't think anyone was. There was a lot of pre-publicity about who would win and why. I'm not sure all the whys got covered, and I guess I'd like to mention a couple of those. Dustin Hoffman, it should be pointed out, and he said so in his acceptance speech, had always said that the Academy Awards were silly. For the first time this year, he actively campaigned. He lobbied for getting one. And people,
how do you do that?
People who are in the Academy are older, established actors, and each year they elect new actors. So the Charlton Hestons and Gregory Pecks, these are people who are officers in the Academy. How you do it, then, is to let those people know at parties that you're serious about it this time. That, you know, you don't know if you have a chance of winning, but you'd really like to, et cetera, et cetera. How one wins, especially with a film like Kramer versus Kramer, I'm not putting down Dustin Hoffman's talent at all, but I'll stick by what I said when I originally reviewed Kramer versus Kramer, which is that his range of emotions is very limited, and he got an excellent vehicle. The film itself really was an Academy Award setup. That part itself didn't really have much to play. The two people who stole my heart in Kramer versus Kramer were Justin Henry, who got nothing, and Jane Alexander, who got nothing. Meryl Streep's part seems to have completed the marriage that could never be in Kramer versus Kramer, but they gave it to them in the awards, when in fact her role seemed to me very predictable. But the character of Jane Alexander, Margaret, the neighbor, who was friend to both and caught in the squeeze, a mother herself and one who let her husband back, seemed to me a very poignant role and a radically new one for Hollywood. So I think that Hoffman is being awarded here something that people should realize is not just Kramer versus Kramer, but his past performances, since he'd been nominated and had not won. So chalk that up as an award for Midnight Cowboy and The Graduate and so forth. I think that people should realize that since Coming Home won last year, it set up a couple consequences. One was that Jane Fonda would not win for China Syndrome, and Jack Lemmon would not win for China Syndrome, which I think is a real shame. I think he gave the performance of his career in that film.
How does Coming Home affect Jack Lemmon?
As an avalanche effect, as a carryover. But China Syndrome is a special case, which I'll mention in a minute. The other consequence I wanted to mention was that since Coming Home was peripherally, related to Vietnam, that Apocalypse Now could not win. And I think it probably suits everyone's stomachs in the conservative academy to do it that way. One doesn't want to reward films with all of the backlog of horror stories and over-expenditures and so on that Coppola got with Apocalypse Now. By the same token, I think that a lot of the film studios now are part of conglomerates with electrical corporations. Paramount, for example, is a Gulf and Western company. These corporations are into energy, and there is no way that the China Syndrome, which attacks nuclear power, will ever become Best Picture. That would have been the surprise for me if that film had gotten any recognition. I think that Melvin Douglas was probably right when he refused to attend, saying that the awards for him were really ridiculous because they pitted him against a child, Justin Henry. And I think that the Academy awards people on the ends of their careers. So there probably was some thinking that Douglas should be rewarded, whereas a Justin Henry, that young, will have plenty more time to get awards. I think also that people should realize that Bob Fosse winning the minor awards for All That Jazz is a kind of stalling technique. If in the next year or so he comes out with another half as excellent a film as All That Jazz, he will win. And I think that Robert Benton won I would say, not to my tastes with Kramer versus Kramer, I think that I would have given it to, I mean, the best films that I reviewed this past year, for example, and we reviewed everything that was up. My favorites, not just personally, but in terms of what they did for film, in terms of technique and social commentary, how they moved audiences, I think were All That Jazz for the radical merger, I think, of serious content with the musical form. And they did steal awards away from Star Trek. If All That Jazz had not existed, Star Trek would have won a lot more awards. Apocalypse Now, I would have considered seriously for Best Picture, although it's not a picture that will give any other awards. The characters are much less important in a film like that. And Northern Lights, which got mentioned for nothing.
Didn't get anything.
And that says a lot about, you know, that Hollywood is really, it's a fascinating phenomenon. It's like the MVP in sports. It's Hollywood is really protecting its own industry, but choosing the format of its rival. It's a TV spectacular. And television is the rival of film.